There's one. Set for stun.
Three guys sitting in a dark room that smells like bad cucumbers.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Inconceivable!
Now featuring 11. 11 listeners.
This is me.
This is the Unique Geek.
And welcome to another edition of 50 Days of Dragon Con, the podcast that is constantly in a state of disarray. And joining me, as always, is Lee. How you doing, Lee?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You're doing well?
I guess. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, as well as can be expected right now. So
it's just, yes. Everything's kind of crazy right now.
Lots of things are crazy. Let's see. Let me look at my countdown. Okay. As we record this, 14 days and 13 hours until.
I don't want to. Yeah, let's not. Let's weeks. Not do that.
Let's see. What is. Oh, I guess you know what? It might. Yeah. About the 13 hours makes it about 9 o'clock. On the Friday. So actually, I need to fix that. So it's like 13 days.
Okay, let's pretend it's a little farther out because I need a little more time to get ready.
Speaking of getting ready, there was some. This has nothing to do with getting ready, but it's just a way to
move
forward.
It's fine. Yeah, there were some announcements today. Yeah. There were some big announcements about Dragon Con. So today we got some more guests. I'm going to totally pimp the paranormal track because we got. Dave Tango and Steve Gonzalez coming from Ghost Hunters. And then we also got one of my favorites, who was Felix Gaeta on Battlestar Galactica, Alessandro Giuliani. And very excited he's coming back. And then we got some more Flash people and things like that. So,
is there anybody left on the Flash to get?
I don't know. Is the Flash coming?
I think they... Ooh, is he? I don't know.
What's his name?
Dwayne Johnson.
What?
Nothing. What?
What's his name? No, his name is not John. What's his real name?
God, I don't remember now. Barry. His name's Barry. Barry
no,
Allen.
That's not his
name's Barry
either.
Allen. What do you mean?
Barry Allen. Yeah. Uh-huh. You're not helpful.
I am not helpful at all.
I don't know if he's coming. See, unless you can tell me his real name.
But there's also, what do you call it? The Dragon Con Awards. We didn't talk about that yet. You can vote for the Dragon Con Awards. They're up on the Dragon Con site.
And they are relatively controversy-free, which is awesome. We don't want controversy.
Yet, so far.
So very excited about this. So far, controversy-free. Very happy about that. And yeah, we do. We'd love... Please vote. Now, you do have to register to vote, but that's fine. You don't have to be coming to Dragon Con.
Do you have to show your ID to vote?
No.
Oh, John went there. Oh, boy.
You did go there.
Oh, boy.
You did go there. You're in a state that makes it do it, and so am I, unfortunately. But we'll just kind of pretend. It's okay. I found out that I have a meeting scheduled that people are coming into from out of state on election day. And everybody's like, well, what are we supposed to do? I was like, vote early. Absentee vote. Don't not vote.
And often.
Dudes, we can't change this date, but you can do that. So, yeah. So there we go.
Grant Gustin.
What?
Grant
Justin?
Gustin.
Gustin.
Is Barry Allen.
It's not Barry Allen. You Gustin. G-U-S.
No, Grant Gustin. All right. Anyway, also the Dragon Con. he's not there.
Oh, he's not there?
No.
Well, why'd you make me go?
I was just trying to make sure that. Anyway, never mind.
No help.
Oh, jeez.
DragonCon TV. And then what?
DragonCon TV.
DragonCon TV. Yes. For an extra $10, if you already have a badge and you want to do this, you can get streaming Dragon Con TV during the con it's only main programming and just the one channel of Dragon Con TV. So whatever's on there is what you get, but it'll be on there. And so you'd see some of the big main room panels. You'd see the little snippets and the bumpers and everything else. So it'd be a lot of fun. Only $10 if you're not in a host hotel.
In that announcement, they did mention that there are a few main ones that they won't be able to show. I imagine it's probably contractual of some sort.
Yes.
I don't know. How long, do you know how long this was in the works for?
I know the last two meetings that I have gone to, the DragonCon TV people and the powers that be have been very chatty.
Okay.
And taking up lots of time. So I think a while.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, but it's really cool. Really excited about it. So that'll be neat. And so for those of you who are in a non-host hotel, you can still get DragonCon TV now. Because I don't know about anybody else, but what my kid likes it for is when he can't get to sleep yet, when he's trying to calm down at the end of the day, he likes to watch some DragonCon TV. He just leaves it on pretty much all the time. That's the TV channel we have in the room. So, yes. So that'll be very cool. That will be very cool.
Well,
and so what?
I was just going to say, well, hopefully he'll be able to watch at DragonCon no major disasters occur.
Well, I'm thinking no major disasters.
Shoehorn this in there.
Huh?
Never mind. Go. Keep going. How much do we have to do, Lee?
I'm getting there. But, John, isn't the Flash, where's the Flash taped? Is it in L.A. Or Vancouver?
It's in my mind. Vancouver, I would imagine.
I would imagine it's Vancouver. And you know what? There's a lot of interesting things that come to DragonCon from Vancouver, like our next guest.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You don't say.
She's a geophysicist. And she has also done has consulted on a lot of TV shows.
Well, why don't we let her?
Possibly one of my favorites.
Why don't we let her explain? First of all, introduce her.
We will. Why don't you introduce her?
Hi, this is Mika, right? Did I pronounce it right?
Yes, it is.
Yes, Mika. Hi, Mika. I'm just harassing John tonight because he's just talking all over me.
That sounds good. And yes, The Flash does film in Vancouver. It was once outside one of my office windows, and I admit I did not get much work done just staring out the window instead.
Oh, wow.
I would think, especially because most of their outfits look like they're a whole lot of leather, I think Arrow and Flash, that Vancouver would be a good place to be taping that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, there's a whole lot of heat.
Yeah, it's Vancouver is nice to film in because
yes,
our weather is pretty much the same year round. And there's one funny little thing I never really thought about until one of the lighting guys pointed it out. But with our perpetually overcast skies,
mm-hmm,
we don't have shadows.
Oh,
we don't have shadows unless you create them with big old stage lighting. So if you
That's
want
true.
Continuity over an entire day long shoot, no worries. You don't have to fight nature. You got your own shadows.
Wow, that's actually
pretty darn cool.
Pretty cool. What is the, on average, what's the temperature there?
Oh, see, I'm going to do this in Canadian measurements.
Oh,
so we get down to almost, but not quite zero, maybe a couple of days hovering up and down. And at our hottest, we might hit 30. But mostly it's winters are 10 to 15. Summers are 20.
In so real numbers, what is that?
Let's convert that and say it's mostly like San Francisco-esque. So
yes,
60s to 70 Fahrenheit.
So 10 you want, 10, as 0 is zero
freezing.
Is freezing. 10 is a sweater. 20 is comfortable. 30 is sweatier.
Yep, exactly.
That's
30 is, oh God, I'm not moving.
Yeah, it's hot. So that just means that pretty much they're in sweater and nice weather pretty much year round.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's sweater. It's not like the, because you're on the, people, if you don't know this, you're on the West Coast. So you don't get, I mean, you get, I think you occasionally get snow, but you don't get a lot of snow.
Yeah, we once hosted the Olympics.
Yeah.
And we kept teasing, instead of the Winter Olympics, we had the Spring Olympics because we had to keep helicoptering in snow from the mountains.
Yeah.
And people wore mittens entirely as decorative things. So there'd be like shorts and mittens.
Yeah. I have some of those mittens. They were awesome. I still have them.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe a little bit about what you do at DragonCon. Then we'll get into some more specifics.
Yes.
So I literally have a Master in Disaster, which is the best degree title ever. So I spend a lot of time looking at things going catastrophically wrong and trying to make sure no one dies in the process. This is, it turns out, perfect if you work in science fiction, where it's a constant stream of apocalyptic scenarios and disasters and catastrophes and dystopias. So I hang out on film sets and say, hey, here's how we can use some science to make your storyline more plausible so that we can save all the suspension of disbelief for the things you actually need in your plot.
Yay.
Yeah. It's fun. It's really, really fun.
So what are some of the things that you've worked on or you consulted for?
So Stargate is my baby. I worked on it for Stargate Atlantis and Stargate Universe for a very long time. By the time we got to Universe, I actually got my own set piece of the crazy hall where the genius scientists are scribbling on the boards trying to figure things out, but they ran out of boards because they're lost in space. So instead they're writing on the walls and it's all my handwriting there and all my equations.
Sweet.
And they make sense and they are part of the plot line and it's all fantastic. So I'd create all these equations and then give the props department these maps and be like, okay, you can go in front of this one for this type of conversation and this one for this type of conversation.
That's pretty cool.
I am curious, how do you get, I mean, so you're in Vancouver and you're also a geophysicist. So you actually do other things. How did you, first of all, become a geophysicist in Vancouver? And then how did you become this kind of consultant person?
Yeah. I'm from the West Coast overall. I used to live in California. And one very true thing about the West Coast is that the Earth itself is trying to kill you.
Yes.
So everywhere has disasters. But on the East Coast, you have storms. The sky is reaching down and going, oh, you guys can all die now. But if you live on the West Coast, we got earthquakes, landslides, volcanoes, all that realm.
And wildfires and rock slides. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And we get an occasional storm, but, you know, not nearly as substantial as the East Coast gets. So living on the West Coast and having a great fondness for living, working in disasters was a really fairly natural consequence. I started in physics, beginning and end of the universe, and went, oh, maybe I should do something a little more applied, kind of care about whether or not we die in the next decade as opposed to the next several billion years. So I started working on volcanoes on Mars, which are really, really cool, but again, unlikely to kill anybody since they haven't erupted in a really long time and we're not living on Mars. Yeah. So I work with landslides, volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunami, all that realm of things. And it turns out when you work with all that, it's really depressing thinking about all the ways for people to die. So I started also working in sci-fi where I can play with all of that and not have anybody dead at the end. That it can be doom in storytelling and fantastic solutions and adventures where we're dealing with, okay, I need an astrophysical big baddie that kills everybody every 20 minutes, as opposed to, why haven't we prepared for the big one earthquake? Everybody in brick schoolhouses is going to die.
Yeah.
Slightly less depressing.
Now,
balance.
Now, before we started, you told a brief little snippet that got Lee all excited, which is that you may or may not have worked on a particular film. Care to elaborate?
Yeah. So after Stargate, I started working on a bunch of pilots and doing a lot of projects that may or may not ever see the light of day. And I'd start working on the script end of things. So people would come up with their story version and I'd help them see how the science fit in. And one day I was asked to work on a whole bunch of tornadoes and I handed it off. And that particular production company, one production cycle later, produced Sharknado.
Ooh. Asylum!
So I don't know whether or not I worked on Sharknado. And this is a great question to me because either I did, in which case, why did they ask for the science unless it was to have a checklist of like, let's do the exact opposite of all of these things, because that's kind of their deal.
Yeah.
Or they didn't. And somebody somewhere has a list of tornado facts that were never used in Sharknado. So,
well, but
I don't know.
It could have been, well, let's get the facts about tornadoes. Oh, okay. That's just not going to make it because we still have to have the big giant sharks in them. So that was really cool. I'm glad we got it. But it's a movie.
Yeah, well, so that's actually the really fun part about doing science consulting in movies is that, so it's really easy to pick apart the science in a movie and be like, oh, they got that wrong and they got that wrong and they got that wrong. And that's no fun. It's easy and it's annoying almost. It's the destruction of a creative property. It's much harder to come up with ways to make things work, to go, okay, how do we get freeze lightning? What is a concept that works for that to explain this phenomena that does not actually exist or that we've never actually seen? How could I make time travel plausible and consistent? How can we deal with tornadoes that can pick up living creatures and hurl them around in a very targeted manner?
So and what they can still live when they're up there, exactly. Even though they need water to live.
Well, somebody's lived through falling through a hailstorm, like fell through a thunderstorm and was like tossed up and down like a piece of hail for several hours. And he lived. Like, that's real life right there. It's possible to survive. It was awful. And there was a pressure suit involved and it was not on purpose at all. It was a crash. But they lived. And that's incredible to me.
That is pretty incredible.
So, well, let me ask you, since you mentioned that, what in your studies, what is the craziest, you know, not the most heart-wrenching or anything like that, but what is the craziest disaster, if you will, or catastrophe or bad thing that you've read or heard about?
So one of the things I really like is with disaster research is when you're working with the physics and the science of it, you just need the physical phenomena. You don't actually need the whole people involved aspect. So I love it when we get like a magnitude 8 earthquake in the middle of nowhere in far northern Alaska and nobody even feels it. Because then we can study all about how this earthquake happened and how it propagated and what shook and what didn't. And nobody's hurt. Nobody's even damaged. Like some trees shook and that's it. Like it's perfect. I also really love stories where a bit of knowledge saves lives. So a local story for me here is I work at my university and we teach classes about disasters and people like to go camping around here. It's beautiful British Columbia, used to be our provincial motto, and everyone goes climbing in the mountains and into the forest. You've seen it all. It's all the background of sci-fi shows. Every alien world looks like our back country. You can see
it's
where
so
we want
pretty.
To go explore.
It's so
exactly.
pretty. It's so
it's
pretty.
It's gorgeous. It's actually the ruins of civilization in Battlestar Galactica was my house, like was in that shot. And I'm like, yeah,
oh, really?
Right, I can handle being the ruins of civilization.
Not a bad idea. That works.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And it was shot from my university. I'm like, yeah, this is my commute. So there were people who were off in the backcountry and a landslide happened. And they remembered our geology class and responded accordingly, going, well, we can't outrun this because a really, really fast landslide is defined as running speed for humans. We're a little bit demented in our definition there. It's literally the definition between a slow landslide and a fast landslide is, could you outrun it? Yes, no. And the answer is no on the fast one. So they went, we can't outrun it. We know that. But we can understand topography, and that landslide is going to go around this corner. It's going to bank up the outside of the turn. It's going to drop on the inside of the turn. Great. Run up the inside of the curve. And they did, and they lived. And it makes me so happy where that tiny bit of knowledge, like that tiny little thing, helped them make a choice that went from being a possible tragedy to a really good story.
Very cool. I like that story.
Yeah,
that is really cool. So, okay.
You're on a bunch of panels this year. Can you, yes. you said like 15, I believe, by the way,
yeah.
That's insane. I think I'm on like 6 or 7, maybe 8. I don't know.
I don't know. But, I can find out.
But 15 is just insane. Who will you be? What panels will you be sitting on this year?
So my home base at DragonCon is always what used to be the Stargate track and is now the military science fiction track. They're the ones who originally invited me to Dragon Con, so of course I always go there and they're my home and it's story time with Mika. Like if you just want to get stories about what it's like to work on set as a scientist when you're a crazy huge fangirl, that's the place to go. As a scientist, I also go hang out on the science track and the space track. But I go everywhere. There's science hiding in all sorts of stories. So I'll be wandering over to the EFF track and talking about what it's like to be a woman working online and getting hundreds of death and rape threats. Or I'll be over on the podcast track. I'm going to be going to the Star Trek track, talking about the newest show and the science in it. Gonna do some public policy, all sorts of things.
Oh, goody. Well,
talking about the science and the librarians is gonna be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's good.
That is very cool. So when you say you have a master's in disaster, you have basically a master's in emergency preparedness or emergency management?
In the physics of disasters, the science of the disaster itself. So how does the earthquake propagate? What can we predict about tsunamis and what can we not predict? It's when landslides get really, really big, they get weird. And so I try and find ways to predict how they're going to be weird so that we don't build a hospital where it's going to come down.
Very good. That's really cool. So, okay. So if there were going to be a disaster at Dragon Con, which disaster causes the most damage and the least damage?
Well, so unfortunately,
it's in Atlanta.
People are what cause things to go from a bad day to a disaster. So we've at Dragon
Pokemon
Con, density of people in a very small place.
Yes.
And they don't have many supplies, but they do, oddly enough, probably have enough supplies to last 72 hours, which is our guidelines, is we want everyone to be able to take care of themselves for 72 hours, food, water, medicines, changes of clothes, all of that. And since so many people are traveling there, they actually probably are pretty good on that one. But then the other half of it is the human psychology aspect. And we just saw a horrible, horrible example of this at JFK Airport where a bit of panic just spread.
Terrible.
A lack of knowledge, a lack of information about what was happening fed into that panic. And we do have a situation at Dragon Con of huge crowds, difficult to communicate with each other. There's not a whole lot that you can do. If people got scared, it could easily cascade. So that to me is the worst case scenario. That is the disaster I don't want to see, is nothing really happened except for everybody panics. Because that's so hard to control and so hard to prevent. We're good at terrorizing ourselves. There's not much mitigation you can do for that. There's not much preparedness you can do for that. In terms of the least damaging one, I'd actually say a storm wouldn't be that bad because you could predict it coming in. You can supply up. In Dragon Con, you can stay indoors and move between the buildings that way. So we wouldn't even have to be that disrupted. If you're going to get locked inside for a blizzard for 2 days, I'd actually kind of like to be at the Dragon Con hotels.
That would be cool.
That wouldn't be so bad. We just actually, you know, if you got too hot, you could go outside for once and have it work.
How is it going to from British Columbia to, you know, Atlanta?
Oh man, it was Dragon Con was my second time ever in Atlanta. My first time was for a little Doctor Who and Stargate convention called Time Gate. They were my first ever convention.
Yes.
And it was my first time being in that kind of weather. I don't know how to deal with humid. I can't.
You really don't have that in Vancouver. You really don't. It's only a little bit after the rain shower. Yeah.
No, we don't even get it then. It's not humid. It's just, I mean, it's like it is, I guess, technically, but not by East Coast scales. So I was actually packing my stuff for Dragon Con today. And so what does a master of disaster wear? What does it look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does a scientist look like is always this fundamental question in science outreach. And I've decided that a master in disaster is ball gowns and opera gloves and high heels because I don't get enough chance to wear these in real life.
There you
so
go.
Dragon Con.
So there you go.
My ball gown.
I think you need a tiara too.
Oh yeah. I'd love a tiara. I don't currently have one.
Do you cosplay at all?
Not actually. And my reasoning for that is that I would have to pick favorites and I can't do it. I did recently realize that, so I watched Ghostbusters and of course loved it with all of my heart.
Yes.
And you know, it turns out that the lovely Kate McKinnon, her character is effectively every scientist I know. We're all that kind of. Those are my friends. Those are my people. And then I looked in my closet and realized I actually have multiple outfits that are effectively Jillian Hosman without actually doing anything. I just have to mix and match and there we go. So I contemplated like, do I accidentally cosplay? Oh.
That's fine if you do. It's okay.
Yeah. Doesn't work with my ball gown theme though. So I'm not going to pack anything of that. My bags have to stay somewhat contained.
Nah.
I do occasionally end up with little Futurama brain slugs, and they are contagious and infect other people on my panels.
Okay.
You know, the worst thing about
plagues.
You know, the worst thing about the new Ghostbusters, right, is that it didn't make enough money that there probably won't be a sequel.
You see, this annoys me because
very unfortunate.
There might. Well, it's when you look at the amount of money that was made and the percentage of money that was made and then compare it to other movies at the same time, it didn't do badly.
No,
it's perception as opposed to reality.
Well,
and that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's
you work in that business. Actually, you should know.
I know. But that's why I'm also a perpetual optimist about things, because if I'm not, then every time I work on a show, I'd be like, oh, it's never actually going to air. It's going to get canceled after the first season. Like you'd have to end up being Eeyore. So I have to be a complete optimist instead.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. I've gone on record here and said that I actually think it's funnier than the first one. I don't think it's better necessarily than the original, but I actually thought it was funnier than the original.
So. I think
I had a lot of fun with it.
Right, yeah.
I had a lot of fun with it, and I think the thing is, John, as you have said, the only big problem I have with it is that, as you said, it doesn't have as many quotable lines.
Yeah. Its biggest
there are some of them.
Its biggest problem is that it's called Ghostbusters, really.
Well, probably.
At the end of the day. Anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, in our world of reboots, so many of the reboots are actually the same thing over and over and over again with no uniqueness or difference to it. This was an actual different plot line and actually different yet recognizable characters and cameos that were well done without slapping you in the face with them. Like, it was overall quite lovely that way.
It was a really
if we're in the era of reboots, then that's the style of reboot I'd like.
Now, when was your first Dragon Con?
Oh, let's see. I think it was in 2012. It's only been a couple of years.
Okay.
So I'm still on the countable number of years that is under 10. I think I might be hitting 5 or 6. I'm not sure.
And when did you start actually paneling? Right away or?
Yeah. Oh. The first time I came was for panels.
Oh, okay.
And this is... It's I just keep adding more and more panels each year because I like staying busy. It's fun. I get to meet new people and talk about cool things and meet different areas of Dragon Con. Like the tracks are such a cool concept for organization. So I now do quite a few conventions all over the place. And Dragon Con is by far my favorite because there's so many people and they're so passionate about so many different things, but the organization is really nice and that you can find people who are interested in what you're interested in without getting locked away into a corner. Like it's easy to do crossover and to mix and match and make everything kind of come together.
Now, if you had to spend time on a track outside of the ones that you already panel for, which track would you want to? So we'll just eliminate those as saying, okay, we know that you like those, but what one outside of those would you hang out at all the time if you could?
So the ones that I'm not on, if we're just going to do panels of tracks that I cannot present on, and therefore I'm not just hanging out with my friends when I go watch their panels, are the gaming and RPG tracks. So hanging over there and seeing what's going on in storytelling and video games, which is an area I don't work in at all, and thus have nothing to say. Anywhere else that I'm like really interested in usually has some science angle where I can just kind of wander on over and be like, oh, hey, how's it going? I hear you're talking about Continuum. You know, there's some time travel in that. Just a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah. Oh, the librarians. Do you know there's some history in there and there's a lot of science in what they're looking for? Yeah. Yeah. Let's chat.
So how... when you're at home, what are your shows that you're watching?
So I am a diehard sci-fi fan. Mm-hmm. So I was a huge Stargate fan before I was ever on the show, which made it really funny. My first day on set, they were giving me instructions. I don't remember anything they said because all I can think was, I'm on John Shepherd's bed. Which
what?
John Shepherd, you know, handsome.
Yes, I know who we're talking about.
Pilot, like he's a geophysics dream boy. It's everything you like,
and he's really smart.
Yeah. So I don't know anything they gave me in my original instructions at all, because that was all I was thinking. I am also not at all work related. I am a guilty pleasure of the murder mystery procedurals. So I'm currently doing a whole bunch of projects that require not much thinking. So I'm binging at the same time while doing my various incredibly boring small menial tasks. And so I just went through all of Mrs. Fisher's mysteries, just back to back to back to back to back. And I just Brooklyn 99 just finished that one off. So just, you know, see what I can find.
Now, in the five years you've been going to Dragon Con, do you have a memory that sticks out in your head that really encapsulated Dragon Con for you?
So the very first time I came, I was scared. I'd never been to a convention like this. I'd never really been to the East Coast before. And there's that stereotype that you're going to have comic book guy who's going to come up to you and go, "Well, actually," and try and out-geek you on things. And it was roughly during the time period of a fake geek girl that hasn't actually, the phrase hadn't existed yet, but, you know, woman in science in public is kind of a ongoing concept. So I was scared that I would start doing these panels and I'd get picked at about, well, why in season 2 of episode 4 of this does this happen? And all of these nitpicky things. And I thought there'd be that confrontation and I was scared. And instead, it was just lovely and delightful. And these fans who were so excited and just wanted to share that excitement. And so I could engage with them about that and be involved and tell stories and have fun. And it turned into this amazing way as well of doing science communication, because people come up to me and say, "Oh, I wish I was a scientist, but, you know, I was never any good at science." And I go, "Okay, cool. What sort of shows are you interested in?" They'd tell me and we chat a little bit. And eventually I'd end up going, "Okay, so you realize you've just taught me about all of the dynamics of the StarCraft engine in your favorite show. Just because it's fictional doesn't mean you're not doing the same process of science. It's just the facts are different." So being able to reach out and go, no, you're not bad at science. You just don't like science classes. It was really fun and interesting.
That's really cool. Now you've mentioned a couple times, you are doing a talk on women in science, right? And which track is that going to be on?
So there's actually going to be a couple of them. So there is Women in Science and Tech Careers, which I think is on the science track. And then there is going to be Online Stalkers and Your Safety in EFF track, and Awesome Women of Podcasting on the podcasting track.
Oh, okay.
So there's a couple of those. Oh, and there's the history version of the Girls of Atomic City on the space track on the Monday, where there's a new book that came out about the women who were involved in the development of the atom bomb. And it's this beautiful history book. So we're going to be talking about that one.
Ooh, neat.
Yes.
Very neat.
Do you know who else will be paneling with you on that? Or?
I'm paneling with so many different people for different ones. On the Girls of Atomic City, it's going to be Pamela Gay, Nicole Gustiani. I think I never know how to say her last name. The Noisy Astronomer, and Erin McDonald. So it's going to be a trio of women in astronomy and astrophysics. I will be the earthbound one.
Well, Mika, we have, I don't know if you've been paying, listening this
no,
year.
No, you're not going to make me do
this. Yes. So we've been doing, at the end of our
John,
discussions, we've been doing quizzes with our head-to-head quizzes with Lee, with our guests. So today I thought we would do a geology quiz.
Okay, Mika.
Yeah.
Let me explain. I'm a sociology major. I'm a bureaucrat now. I'm very good at what I do.
She
but
makes
I'm a
your job difficult.
Sociology
what she's saying.
Major with a history minor. And John is enjoying this way too much.
Okay.
So but sure I'm going to learn something just like I did on the science.
We'll go back and forth. And this, and if any of these answers are incorrect, you can let me know, because I'm just pulling up something randomly from the internet. I believe this might be a sixth grade level class. So, you know, there we go.
All right.
We'll start with you, Mika. Which is the, and actually They are multiple choice, but if you know the answer, you can just, you know, say it. And we'll...
All right.
Which is the process of dropping sediment in new locations? Is it erosion, weathering, deposition? Deposition? Deposition?
Deposition. It's deposition.
It's actually called deposition? Yeah. Okay.
It's deposition. You're depositing things through deposition. I was going, wait, is there a trick to this? Nope. Erosion is the transporting or the pulling it away. The weathering is the breaking the rock down so the rock rots, which is really fun. You don't really think about rocks rotting very much, but I went to Australia and learned that several million old volcanoes, you identify them because you stick your finger in and it just kind of keeps going because they turn to clay.
Wow. So you did learn something today, Lee.
I did. I'm listening very closely.
Well, Lee, here is your question.
Oh, God.
Which is a characteristic of a rock? A solid material that is formed by nature in or on Earth's crust. B, a material that always has a crystal form. C, a material formed by a living thing. Or D, a material that is non-solid.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to say A. Hold on.
I'd agree with that.
That is absolutely.
If it has crystal form, it'd be a crystal, maybe a mineral, if you have several of them.
Right. And it has to have a solid form to be a rock.
Yeah. I mean, there's geological materials that aren't solid, like the magma in the earth is more.
But that's not a rock. So.
Well, it's, I mean.
Oh. It'll become a rock. It's been thrown down. Go ahead.
You want to get into crazy earth scientist mode.
I don't. Because this is sixth grade.
I'd be like, the entire planet is rocks. But no, it's geological material, not a rock when it's in goopy form.
There you go. So, John, was I right?
Yes, you were. Now, yes. I gotta ask this question. Is goopy form a scientific term, or is that more an accounting term?
It's in geoscience, we tend to be very, very direct. It's the basic principles of geoscience are all really, really simple, and we just kind of disguise them with fancy words. So, for example, if you want to do a geologic murder mystery and see how things, you have the evidence of what it is now, you need to figure out what happened, we call that stratigraphy. We could call it a murder mystery. No, we don't get to kill anybody in it. So we just stick fancy words on basic processes.
See?
Well, okay. There you go. Yeah. All right, so... This is for Mika. Let's see. Which is not an effect of wind erosion? So I guess you're going to have to hear the ABC here. It removes and shapes Earth's surface. B, it creates arches and natural bridges. C, it carves out canyons. Or D, it creates sand dunes. It's not affected
by
wind
erosion.
Well,
water is the one that carves out canyons. But wind would erode inside the canyon and make it bigger and prettier over time. Like, wind is still helping the Grand Canyon get infinitesimally larger. So that's the one that isn't, because it's mostly water.
Okay, so carves out canyons is the answer?
Is the correct answer. The thing that wind does not do.
Yes, you are absolutely correct. Now, out of curiosity, Lee, would you have gotten that correct?
I think I might have, because I know that canyons are water. Canyons start because of water. Okay. The Grand Canyon started because of water. So, yes, possibly.
The not-so-Grand Canyon started because of, you know, nothing. Anyway, I had nothing there.
We're all waiting on that one. Well, it's...
Go ahead.
Reasons that we want to go to Mars one day is because Mars will have the best sightseeing ever, including the tallest volcano in the solar system and the biggest canyon in the solar system. So, Mars has Olympus Mons, which is... gigantic volcano. Unusually, it's the same type of volcano as the Hawaiian one, so it would not actually be like really steep and pointy like Mount St. Helens or Krakatoa or anything. It would actually be like a big rounded dome. But it also has the Valles Marineris, which is the biggest canyon system that's just crazy huge, and it would be so much fun for Mars tourism. So,
man.
Reasons we should fund the space program is so we can go play tourist on Mars.
Oh, I desperately want to go play tourist on Mars. I desperately, desperately do.
Mika, when are you starting your podcast? Because I could seriously sit here and listen to you talk about this stuff all day long.
I just like going and visiting other people's podcasts. I have fun.
All right, Lee,
that
whole weekly schedule thing and all of that, that's just far too much effort. But, showing up, chatting with folks, learning new things. It's good times.
Okay, Lee, this one's for you. Which of the following is an effect of ice erosion?
Ice erosion. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It causes mudslides. It creates sand dunes. It makes valleys in the mountains. It creates arches and natural bridges.
I think the ice doesn't do the sand dunes.
But no, which is the following is an effect.
Oh, is an effect.
Yes.
So say them again. Is an effect of ice. There's only one of them that's an effect of ice? Are you sure?
Ice erosion. Yeah.
I'd say this is a really mean question, and a better way of phrasing it would be, what do glaciers do?
Okay, go again, John.
Okay, mudslides, sand dunes, valleys in the mountains, or arches and natural bridges.
Creates, causes, makes. Oh boy, I'm gonna go with valleys in the mountain, but I think it also could be mudslides.
You're correct.
Valleys in the mountain are totally going to be frozen water.
See, that's what I thought. See, because it comes from the top of the mountain, goes down. Ha ha! Sociology for the win, baby.
Yeah,
but this is a sixth grade book.
I'd also say that's an incredibly mean question, that if it was actually given to people, I would argue every single answer is true under certain circumstances, and none of them are true under certain circumstances.
Right, because I thought it was like all of them could have been created by it, and which of these couldn't? And I was like, I would go from a sixth grade standpoint, because see, that's the other thing. I'm like, okay, could it done some more into that bridge if there was enough water? Could have done the mudslides, could have done the valleys, but I would have an argument that most sand dunes are not from glaciers. Although the argument could be that they are, because as glaciers go down, the water goes up in the oceans, and therefore that can cause different effects on sand dunes as well.
Well, so glaciers and valleys, and I'm going to do our sci-fi link in here, which is...
Yes.
When you have glaciers carving valleys, they carve instead of the V-shape that you get from rivers, they do a U-shape with really sharp vertical walls. And then if you have ocean that goes into those U-shaped valleys, you have fjords. And we all know from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that dear old Earth got prizes for its fjords in Norway.
That's right.
I would argue the fjords of British Columbia are prettier, but that's only because they're my home.
But they are pretty. I saw them.
I understand that they're the most difficult to do, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Mika, this is for you. How does erosion change a beach? A, waves move and carry sediment to new locations, changing the length of the beach. B, waves create sand dunes, which block the ocean. Okay. C, waves move the tectonic plates and cause earthquakes. D, waves push the sand further up on the beach, making it wider.
So none of those are right. And three of them are arguably right if I had somebody who needed to do it. The one they want me to answer is that it moves and lengthens the beach. But that's only kind of true. So waves strip water from one place and move it somewhere else. And this has a really cool impact when you are on a beach with human-made structures, so those big, long piers jutting out into the water, that the upcurrent side will get sand filling in behind it. The downcurrent side will have the sand erode away. Well, we do those specifically to create fake beaches. So if you do them, you can actually steal sand from your neighbors. So it turns into all sorts of problems. And there was a disaster on the little islands up on the East Coast because of this, because they... installed them in the wrong order,
stole too much
sand, made it too narrow, and the island got cut in half by a storm.
And it's also what is happening on the Jersey Shore. Ha ha, my environmental health class, John, you're in a little bit of trouble here. You forgot I took that for my grad school this year. Also with the beaches there, and everybody's like, oh, my house won't stay silt. Well, guess what? You built it there, and that's not a good idea. Yeah, that's not a good idea. Right. Ha ha, John.
Seasonally, you can get winter storms strip sand from beaches and summer waves put sand back on beaches. So that is a way of making a beach narrower and wider, but it's not the answer they were going for. It's definitely not plate tectonics because plate tectonics cause earthquakes. Coolest plate tectonics fact ever. Plate tectonics move at the same rate your fingernails grow. So every time you clip your nails, think, hey, we're that much closer to the big one in San Francisco.
That is really
interesting. That's horrifying.
Thank you. No, it's not. That's interesting. That tells me how long I shouldn't go to San Francisco or LA. Okay.
Well, let me ask you this. How long till Florida's underwater?
Oh, God. Parts of it already are.
Well, but it started that way.
And it's getting more that way. I mean, this is the same deal of the Mississippi River. As soon as we stopped allowing it to keep depositing more and more mud there, the entire delta is sinking. That is what deltas do. They get refurbished by having more sediments inland, but we've stopped it getting more sediment because we've controlled the floods and we dredged the river, so it's going to sink faster. And then we strip away the natural protections of marshes and lagoons and all of that, so it's going to erode faster. This is, we as humans are really good at speeding up bad things.
So we're not good. We're pretty bad at it.
So fun fact, I live in Tampa. And where I live, about a half mile down the road, there's a little sign put up by the city that says, in the event of a hurricane, the storm surge could get to this level. It's about three times my height over my head.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep. It's definitely terrifying. I live in British Columbia, where we're at danger from the Cascadia Zone earthquake, the earthquake that terrified everyone in the New York Times article last year. And that's scary enough. But the one thing I don't really need to worry about is sea level rise, because we've got a 1-2 process here, where first one plate going under another shoves it up. And that's what's happening. That's why we get huge earthquakes, is one plate is going under another. The second thing is until 15,000 years ago, we had all these glaciers here covering pretty much the entirety of Canada. We're cold in northern country. And that weight of the ice squishes everything down. Well, the ice melted, pulled away, all of that. And the entire crust has been bouncing back up since then in most of the northern hemisphere. British Columbia, our coast, is the only place where both those things are happening at once. So our land is bouncing up faster than sea level rise is coming. So we're running away from the ocean.
See, Florida, you got to get away from Florida, John.
By the way, the answer that you did give was the answer that they wanted. So
yes, it's so I am the geology auntie for my nieces, and definitely some of these questions are ones that would have me angrily calling up the teacher and being like, "How dare you tell my niece they needed to answer this question? Your question is wrong. I'll be a terrible auntie."
Lee, here's your question. Uh-oh. Which of the following is not a cause of erosion? Gravity, water, wind, or plant roots? Which of the following plant is roots. Not a cause of erosion? Plant roots?
Plant roots.
That is correct.
They it stop is, erosion.
A cause of weathering.
It is. And so it's also a cause. Right. And depending on where you are, it's also an invasive species that causes other issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you'd done that exact same question about weathering, gravity is the one that'd be oddball out.
Oh.
So you could just repeat that question, because weathering is destroying the rock, rotting the rock, whereas erosion is moving the bits and pieces that have already rotted off.
I am learning way more than I ever learned in any of my earth science classes at this point.
See? It's awesome.
Just show up any of my tracks. We'll do science on whatever topic you like. I'm good with that.
All right.
I'm free for all on science. I'm not so hot on the biology aspect of things. Things that smell funny or move independently confuse me a bit much. But that's why I pair up with people.
That's why you like rocks.
I'm curious. Exactly.
That's why you like rocks. It's good.
And
it's good.
Because if I get frustrated and throw them off a cliff, I haven't committed a crime.
That's true.
Very important. No murder at work.
Yeah, no murder.
Definitely like no murder, no qualification.
Nobody, no matter what Orange is the New Black says, nobody looks good in an orange jumpsuit.
Although I am on a track called Getting Away with Murder. It's one of my panels, so.
That would be a very interesting one to listen to.
Yeah, it's I'm there with Rochelle Burks, who's a forensic chemist. And then I don't actually know Jessica Perilla. I haven't met her yet, so. It'll be a panel of ladies telling you how to kill people.
But Dragon Gone does not condone you doing that. We're just saying, hypothetically. Just, hypothetically.
Exactly.
Right.
If you need it for your plot lines and your stories, purely
that's
fictional,
exactly right.
If you want that.
Right.
All right, Mika, which of the combinations would become part of soil over time? A, stick, rock, can. B, twig, leaf, pebble. C, dead insect, plastic bag, sand. Or D, glass bottle, apple, grass.
Okay, so this is the anti-pollution question. All the ones that have man-made things in them are not going to turn into dirt.
No. So cans aren't going to turn into dirt, plastic, or glass.
So, yeah, although...
although glass kind of could if it got pulverized enough.
Yeah, it's, you can turn it into sand, it's silica. And this is one of the more depressing factoids I have tucked away in my brain. In Hawaii, we've now had to classify a new type of rock that is made up of melted plastics.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's the official geologic marker of the beginning of the so the human layer of our geologic timeline is going to be marked by plastic rocks.
Ugh. Oh, that's a darn shame. Yes.
It's a very depressing factoid, that one.
Yes, it is. John, give me a happy question.
Okay. Oh, by the way, the score update, 4-3 right now. We played a 5, so Lee, you've got to get this one and hope that Mika misses the next one.
I don't think either one. I'm pretty sure the latter is not going to happen. But keep going. Okay.
Which of the following is not an effect of water erosion? Which is very similar to a question we've had earlier. But anyway, A, it carves out canyons. B, it creates gullies and rivers. C, it can form a delta at the mouth of a river. Or D, it forms sand dunes. We have literally talked about every single thing on here.
So it's D again. Sorry, it doesn't do sand dunes.
That is correct. Lee's at 4. Okay. No pressure, Mika. But you got to get this one to win.
There we go. Except for she totally gets the second question too then, right? Like it's...
Oh, no.
Otherwise...
No. It's never 1-5. He wants me to win.
No.
See, he actually is very upset right now that I can't even
pick the harder quiz.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a structural bias in my favor here.
It is.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about.
And it's also that I have a thing for Canada, and he doesn't want me to get started on that either, because we could talk about those mittens that I have that are the official Vancouver mittens. Oh my God, they were so awesome. Sorry.
Or that we finally ended our war on science and we're actually, you know, we now have an astronaut as Minister of Transportation.
That is so awesome. Your new prime minister is, he's in my
dreamy.
Top 10.
He's dreamy.
I mean, I probably shouldn't say that, but he is. He's adorable. You know? I don't even know if he's in my top 10. It's more of, I'd really like to talk to him and have a beer with him and then some poutine.
Yeah. And he probably would. He'd probably do all of the above, considering that, you know, he pops out of caves at people.
Yes. And photobombed a wedding accidentally.
Oops. So now, since we're on the Canada thing, have you ever curled?
Yes.
It's so hard.
Yes, indeed.
You have? Oh.
It's so much fun. Of course I have.
Well, it involves a rock, so.
Yeah, it's a giant kettle on ice.
It's 20 pounds of polished granite with a beveled underbelly. How could she have not?
And you manipulate friction as the game.
Yes.
Like, the entire game is, hey, what can you do with physics?
How fast can I make this go and move and spin around? That is so awesome. See, curling is fun, John. I told you.
It's totally a blast. It is. If you've never been curling, you want to try it, possibly very late at night with a lot of beer. But even completely dead sober with all of your relatives, it's still fun.
I did it dead sober. I can't do it because, I did it, but I kind of did it. It was fun. I did a terrible job. Yeah. Didn't care.
Even if you're awful with it, it's fun. Like, that's one of the great things. And I mean...
Uh-oh. Hello? I lost you. Hello? What happened? Anybody there?
You've got to have real time feedback on what they were doing.
Okay.
What's wrong?
I lost you guys for like two or three minutes. The last thing I heard was drinking beer and curling.
We also concluded it's completely fine to do sober, and we're just chatting about curling scandals.
We're still talking curling because scandals. There was a Canadian curling scandal when they came in. So keep going. Are we still on?
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a little break, but it's just curling. We're still talking curling.
Exactly. Curling is the best.
Because curling is so awesome.
So there was a scandal when we first started giving the sweeps like actual feedback, real-time feedback about whether that was unfair levels of information and that you needed to have intuition and not science. And we finally concluded, no, you're allowed to use science in training, but you don't get it in actual play.
Right.
So that was
because the
big debate.
But having science in practice doesn't matter. I mean, you still got to be able to do it again. And as anyone will tell you, when you throw a curling rock, yes, there are little tiny things that come up all the time. All of a sudden, you flicked your wrist a half a centimeter before you meant to, and you're in trouble.
And as a sociologist, you know that one of the most important things in learning is to get immediate and relevant feedback. So having real-time feedback is the best possible way to learn.
Exactly. And we learn from history, so we keep doing it a lot of times. That's important. But again, we could screw it up again forward. Yeah. See? Curling is awesome. Curling is, yeah. And have you seen the movie? You did see the movie Men with Brooms, right?
Of course.
I mean, of course. Isn't that awesome? I love that movie.
All right. So final question, possibly.
Get us off the curling topic. All right. Fine.
I can keep talking about curling. You know I can.
I know you
can. My husband, every year, whenever the Winter Olympics on, he will DVR the curling for me so I can come upstairs and watch it.
Oh, that's sweet.
That is very sweet. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. Okay, so sorry, John.
Which?
Go to her fifth question so she'll win.
Which characteristic is the same for rocks and minerals? They are both made from plant and animal remains. Again, sixth grade. They are both solids that come in different shapes and sizes. They both change with pressure and heat. And, or D, they are man-made. Which character is the same?
The answer it's supposed to be is that they're both solids. However, you could really strongly argue they both change with pressure and heat because minerals change into other minerals if you heat them up too much. But the mineral, then it becomes something else and thus doesn't have the same name. And so I see them declaring that as a wrong answer. And again, invoking the wrath of Auntie Mika coming in and defending her niece's geology tests.
I would agree with that because my other issue, when I said that, it's like, but you can, rocks will change, things will change, and they'll become, you can push two things together and they become something new.
Yeah, so one of the fun things about the heat and pressure in rocks is that the minerals will change themselves, and we call them index minerals to go, well, this is what temperature and heat we were at when this rock changed, and then use that as part of our geologic murder mystery to figure out what happened and what caused this rock to exist like it currently does. It's also, rocks are strongest under the conditions they were formed in. So if you want to beat a rock up really well, you want to get something that formed deep underground under huge pressure and heat. And if you want a really, really strong rock, you want something that formed up on the surface where it's cold and low pressure.
Dang
it. At least if you're beating it up here.
All right. I'll give you one consolation chance here, Lee.
Okay.
Okay. What is the rock's real name?
Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, darn. You got that right, too.
And you seen Rufy with San Andreas. It only had one piece of advice that would get you killed. So otherwise, I was quite happy with it.
Really?
Oh, they had lots. From an emergency preparedness standpoint, they had lots of things that would get you killed.
Were you thrilled with the fact that he had access to a helicopter and yet only looked for his family?
I was fine with that. I liked the movie had a smart brunette girl who won hearts by being prepared. Like, I can deal with that as a
That was true. That was true.
And there was only one major piece of advice that would flat out get you killed, and everything else would be just like,
What was that piece of advice that no one should follow?
That's the triangle of life, which is complete and total nonsense and makes absolutely no sense at all in anywhere that has a decent building code. Like, if you're in North America, you've got strong enough building codes so you're not worried about the building falling down on you. You're worried about things inside the building killing you. It's even with our buildings and our big old disaster zone up here, maybe the building won't be inhabitable afterwards, but they're designed to fail in ways that keep people inside alive.
So
drop, cover, and hold on is what you do. You do drop, cover, and hold on. Forget the triangles. Drop, cover, hold on.
So was San Andreas plausible?
They put the earthquake in the wrong place. If they moved it north 1,000 miles, it would make a lot more sense. And then you just kind of exaggerate, right? Like earthquake early warning. We could, if we wanted to, spend the money to get an earthquake early warning system, but it'd give you like 30 seconds warning, not enough time to have multiple phone calls and argue with people and run around and report and nag. Or like tsunami are more than one wave, but they are really, really massive. And they're also faster than we're in the movie. They travel when they're at close to land, they travel at highway speeds. So 55 miles an hour, roughly speaking. Open ocean is jet airliner speeds, near the coast is 55 miles an hour. And you'd have lots of aftershocks and broad strokes. Yeah, close enough. Like, it's a movie. It's allowed to have chunks of it where you exaggerate and go over the top. But it would have been more plausible if it was set in Portland, Seattle, or Vancouver.
Well, that's frightening as well.
But we don't want it in Vancouver, because that's a beautiful place, and then we wouldn't have any new TV.
It's true, but Vancouver is actually one of the best places to be for a tsunami, because we have this gigantic wave break called Vancouver Island.
Yes,
so
we do.
Just sacrifice Victoria.
But Victoria, but they have that great hotel with the tea house.
Yes, and you can have it's the Empress Hotel. You can have high tea at the Empress Hotel, and people are playing Scottish bagpipes outside, and it's all very British.
It is very British Canadian, because then you can also talk about hockey with people. Because somebody was arguing hockey the time I went.
Awesome. And the music is very, very Canadian. We do punk rock fiddle folk music.
Yes.
Otherwise known as cluster folk music.
Nice. All right. Lee, one last question. Mm-hmm. All right. Then answer this and I'll declare you a co-winner. What was The Rock cooking?
Huh?
Never mind. All right, Mika, thank you for joining us.
What in the world? I don't know what that meant.
Can you his catchphrase when he was in wrestling?
What The Rock is cooking?
Right.
And then, of course, it spawned an entire series of memes with him in front of like pancake stacks and things like that.
No, you do understand. I imagine wrestling, right?
I imagine seeing what he eats. It was probably chicken breast. He was probably cooking chicken breast.
Okay.
That or cod is the other thing he seems to like a lot to eat a lot.
Cod is good for you.
Well, you don't get to his shape by eating what I eat. So anyway,
I need. Oh boy, you're coming from Vancouver. You'll have Smarties.
Yeah.
I always do.
Should I pack some extra for you?
She'll have the dark chocolate Kit Kats too. The really good ones.
Is that
no, it's like? Okay. You don't have to park extra Smarties for me, but I just remembered you're coming from Vancouver. Home of the greatest candy in the world. Canada.
Well, before Lee goes off into a diabetic coma.
You could bring me a Mountie.
Yeah, just pack one in my bag.
Sure.
They're very pretty.
Some of them are very, very pretty.
Are there any unattractive Mounties?
Yes.
Okay. I have never seen one.
But we don't put them in the photo ops.
Put them in the photo ops. No.
Exactly. No. And I mean, in Canada, we have a very... our version of the political scandal in Canada is a little bit special. We don't have sex scandals with our politicians anymore, ever since one of them declared what happens between consenting adults behind closed doors is no one's business but their own. And everyone went, yeah, you're right. So instead, our biggest political scandal was one politician calling another, and I quote, a kitten-eating reptilian from another planet.
So for the most part, the stereotype is correct. You guys are just incredibly polite.
We're just, we have adorable scandals. We have absolutely
adorable scandals.
It comes from, what it is? I think it comes from the space. There's a lot of space in between you guys.
Do you remember this is a country where Rob Ford got reelected?
Well,
yeah, we also.
But then again, Mary and Barry got reelected.
Well, that's true. Yeah, people don't care about that much anymore. I'm sorry. You also had a politician.
Who had to pull out of his campaign because he got caught on camera peeing into a coffee cup and then sticking it in the sink without even rinsing it out.
So the problem was him not rinsing it out.
He wasn't clean about it afterwards.
That's what it was.
Multiple stages of gross in this. So, yeah.
The rest of it, forgivable. But
I kind of feel like Canada was a prep for everybody else of, like, what can you do in a political campaign? How far is too far? We try it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then look at what we have down here. All right, so...
Kid meeting reptilians from another planet. All right, yeah.
I really want that on a t-shirt now.
At least one of our presidential candidates probably is.
I want that on a t-shirt now. Along with a Mountie inside that t-shirt.
There you go.
Holding Smarties.
We have now figured out what we should all get for Christmas.
There you go.
I'll talk to Rosie. All right, so Mika, thank you for joining us again. You can check her out at the science track, the sci-fi military track, the track that has other things, and well, basically every
track, everywhere,
every track except for paranormal.
Mm. Hey, you could find my way
onto the skeptics track one day.
You could also come visit us at X Track. We're going to talk about. If aliens are found, what would be some of the repercussions?
I have so much fun. I've been interviewing Jill Tarter from the SETI Institute. She's amazing. If you ever get a chance to talk to her, do it. She's incredible.
Awesome.
Wow. So you... okay, anyway, I, again, could talk to you for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. Again... Do you have a public website, or is it just, you know, show up at DragonCon and say hey?
So I am on Twitter as Mika McKinnon. That is where I do most of my science outreach. Everything else is in various states of confused and needing to be updated. You know that problem.
So Mika McKinnon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's M-I-K-A McKinnon.
M-C-K-I-N-N-O-N, same as Katie McKinnon from Ghostbusters, no relation, sadly.
All right, so cool. So until next time, this is John for Mika and Lee saying peace.
Bye. It's parties.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 833-210-TUG or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter, @TheUniqueGeek. Visit our listserv at listserv.theuniquegeek.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike non-commercial license.